Dear Lord, what a sad little life, Jay.
Now, on FUBAR Radio, it's Pulse of the Nation.
Well, I'm being shady-ish,
I'm going to find me, Darren!
Boring!
You have to catch me first, I'm like a whippet.
Nah, it's not fun, I've got school.
Bus wankers!
And that was the fucking news.
Here's your host, Andrew White.
Hello, and welcome to Pulse of the Nation. We have got our finger on the pulse of 3 weeks ago. Yes, this is a weirdly pre-recorded episode today. We've had some absolute nightmares of travel. I got stuck on a southern service to Victoria. I got stuck at fucking Wandsworth Common for 30 minutes. Finally made it onto the Underground. And then I got stuck at King's Cross St Pancras on the Piccadilly line for another 30 minutes. So we had to abandon the episode that was meant to go out today. And we were pre-recording it for the 11th of November. So we're going to do a sightseeing, future sightseeing. That's not the word I'm looking for. Foresight, future see. We're going to guess what the news will be in about 3 weeks' time. So you're listening to this on the 11th of November. I'll tell you what's happening at the moment in the news. Well, heartbreak for me. I got three separate messages, including from my friend Max, who said my condolences. My friend Joe, who said, I'm so sorry, flags at half mast tonight. And that is, of course, the news that Pizza Hut has gone into administration. Hundreds of Pizza Hut physical high street locations are shutting down, especially around Hampshire, where I live. And, you know, you have these moments and you just think, did I buff enough? You know, did I go to enough Pizza Hut buffets? Is this my fault? Am I responsible for the decline of the high street Pizza Hut? Maybe we all are. As collectively, as a society, we didn't go to enough Pizza Hut buffets. And this is what happens, you know. If you don't support your local buff, it goes. You know, enjoy it where you can. There's a lesson about life in general there. I loved a Pizza Hut buffet. My tips, while you still have time to enjoy it, is you want a busy, but not too busy, inner city buff, right? If you go to a rural buff, because a lot of, you know, pizza sort of locations, they're like in you know, sort of industrial estates, just like slightly out of town. They're normally next to like a cinema or something. Well, the problem is those ones, especially midweek when you get the best value of buff, I believe it's $14.99 for unlimited pizza, unlimited ice cream and unlimited drinks. This isn't sponsored by Pizza, by the way. This is just one of my personal passions. I've got no guests today, so I've got a lot of time to fill. And one of the things I can talk endlessly about is Pizza buffets. So here you are, strap in. And it is relevant. It is relevant. It's topical to the news. The pizzas are shutting down. Anyway, okay. I don't need to justify myself to you, dear listener. I'll do what I want. This is my show, Pulse of the Nation. You're listening to Andrew White. Thank you for tuning in. Anyway, point is, you go to an inner city buff because there's a good rotation of pizza. If you go to one of those rural buffs on the sort of outskirts of town and it's a little bit quiet, I went to one the other day with my friend Danica. I go to a lot of pizza buffets in my life. There was only five of us in the entire restaurant. Five, and that's five total, not five tables. Three tables, five people. Two, and a solo buffet traveller. God bless him. God bless the solo buffet man. I've done it myself. I've been in between gigs, you know, go down on my own, just lock in for a buffet as much as you can. It's better, you know, when you're on your own, you can sort of live by your own standards. You know, you're not trying to pick up stragglers as you go along, trying to get the best value out of the buffet. Maybe I'm responsible for the death of the pizza buffet because I absolutely ate and drank it dry. But the point is, you want an inner city buff because it's busy, but it's not too busy in the terms of, you know, there's competition for the slices. It keeps you, you know, it keeps you on your toes. But also, there's a good turnover. The kitchen knows they've got to get the pizzas coming. In those sort of rural buffs, they slack a little bit, you know. They get out what they can and they just sort of wait for it to go. The problem is there's only five of us. We can't get through the level of pizza required. And also, if there's an unpopular pizza, that's going to stay on rotation until we all get through it. So collectively, we have to chip in to eat an undesirable sort of, you know, mushroom pizza just to get it replaced on the roster. So the point is, I'm just saying, we've got a few weeks left to buff before the many, many pizza huts go into administration. Head to an inner city buff. That is your best bet for a good rotation of pizza, a good quality of service. And yeah, it really is a shame, you know, to see this sort of happen. I blame the ex Tory government. I know this happened under Keir Starmer, but I do think this is unfortunately a symptom of the previous rule of Liz Truss, of Rishi Sunak, people like that. You know, we blame Margaret Thatcher for closing the steel factories. Personally, I blame Liz Truss for closing the ice cream factories. That's what she's done. So yes, very, very sad to see Pizza Huts disappearing from our high street. And that tells you how much I talk about it, that three separate friends not just messaged me to let me know what was happening, but messaged me condolences. They got ahead of the curve. They knew I was going to be distraught. I am. And that's some very sad news that's happening here today. What else has been happening? There's all sorts. The high street sort of just fucking disappearing. This is going to be, I think, a very complainy episode. As I say, I've had lots of travel in today. I've got this here on the again, I shouldn't really be putting this on the FUBAR search history, but I've got some Etsy witches. I don't know if you remember, that was quite big during the Charlie Kirk thing, that you could hire Etsy witches to curse people, arguably, depending on your point of view, very effectively in terms of Charlie Kirk. But yeah, there's some very good highly rated witches here. This one's got 3,500 five-star reviews, £2.80. That's a psychic reading. I don't necessarily need that. I want a spell. This is what I want, a custom spell dispatched from the UK, £7.99. Same day. That's pretty good. Let's have a look at this. £7.99. I will spend all of today's profits, whatever I get paid for today's show, on Etsy curses to sort of curse some of the people that have wronged me today, including but not limited to Southern Rail, TfL, and particularly the Piccadilly line and the signalling fault at Cockfosters. So yeah, this is pretty good. 4.7. I want to find if there's a bad review. This is what, you know, I do enjoy reading a good bad review, and I wonder if there's a sort of one star review of an Etsy. They're all very five stars. A very nice, helpful, and positive person. I don't necessarily want positive. I want to curse. I'm going to offer a pox on these people that have wronged me. The Pizza Hut administrators that, of course, have robbed me from my buffet, as I say, the TfL, Southern Rail, Margaret Thatcher as well. Put Margaret Thatcher in there. She turned 100 recently. Well, obviously, you know, she's dead, thankfully. But if she was alive, God help us, she would have been 100. But, you know, I do think a lot of the decline of our society is down to Margaret Thatcher. My late granddad would always blame things on Margaret Thatcher. And I always thought he was silly at the time. But actually, if you look at it, the sort of the destruction of society, the selling off of council houses, the privatisation of all of our crucial services, it does really fall down to Thatcher. She did sort of, that's her legacy. That's what we'll hopefully remember her for being the horrible, absolutely rancid woman that ruined this country. But yes, it was her 100th birthday last week, so happy birthday, Margaret Thatcher. Who else would I like to curse? Let's have a look. Charles, King Charles, going over to the Vatican. He's going to pray with the Pope. Obviously, that makes sense. You know, the royal family and the Pope, sort of both famous paedophile protectors. That's a good sort of alliance. You know, good sort of a partnership. Good God bless them, I guess. You know what? I put Zach Polanski on my list, but this isn't for cursing. This is, you know, this is a spot of, this isn't all going to be negative. I'm not going to use all of my money as on Etsy witch cursing. I'd love to offer some protection to Zach Polanski, who is offering a genuine breath of fresh air in the British political landscape, and top quality memes, may I say, actually. Go check out the Green Party Instagram. They're absolutely nailing that sort of youth vote. I know we're sort of told this lie that the reform are reaching these young boys. And yes, of course, they're reaching the sort of corners of the incel network, but actually, if you look at the genuine true youth voting intentions, it is largely spread across Labour, Lib Dem and Green. So yeah, don't believe all the doom and gloom. Zach Plansky is doing a very, very good job for the Greens. Meanwhile, Reform just continue to be their hideous selves. The bullshit that we get told, that's constantly, because Zach Plansky is genuinely a breath of fresh air. He's very, very honest. He's got policies that are genuinely like radical and new and like make sense, you know. There was a Labour politician that made a meme of the, it was like a sort of cartoon of the three Green Party leaders going, oh, abolish bad things. And the Green Party reposted it like, yes, this is what we want to do, abolish bad things, obviously. What are you doing in Labour? We're fans of bad things? I don't know, it's pathetic, isn't it? But Reform, I cannot buy this narrative that they're a breath of fresh air. Nigel Farage has been in British politics for 30 plus years. Every single significant member of the Reform sort of political class are just ex-Tories, ex-UKIP. They've been around for 20, 30 years. They're not offering anything new. They're just offering more of the same and more of worse. The only sort of new Reform councillors, if you look at the actual Reform councillors, that this isn't the politics show, by the way, this is Pulse of the Nation. I'm just on my high horse. I've got no guests today. I've spoke 7 minutes about a Pizza Hut buffet, so, and I'm on to Reform now. We do have people we are to later in the show. We'll be talking to a genuine internet legend who has absolutely blazed a trail in terms of virality. We'll be speaking to him later, so it's not all doom and gloom today, I do promise. And we'll also have an interview with cabaret star Salty Brine. So there's lots of positive things to look forward to, but I'll just finish my thoughts about Reform, because I hate Nigel Farage and Zia Yusuf and Richard Tice. They're all horrible, rancid people. But yeah, if you look at the Reform councillors, first of all, many, many, many have quit. Many, many, many have been, disqualified, discharged, had the whip removed, criminal investigations, proven wife beaters. And then what's left is just ex-Tories. It's a sex tape. It's nothing new at all. It's just fucking pathetic, isn't it? Anyway, what else has been happening? what have I stuck the boot into so far? Southern Rail, TfL, the Royal Family, Reform. Oh, actually, yes. While we're at this, I've got my little list of things to pox here. I will spend another... What is that? $7.99. What are we on now? That's $14.98. So that's one for TfL. That's $7.99. One for Southern Rail. That's $14.98. One for Reform, that takes us up to $21.97, and then we'll do one for the Royal Family. Why not? That takes us up to $28.96. So I'm working through my weekly radio fee here. Obviously, I've got expenses to take away from that, but I think I've got enough for two or three more curses, and I will use my next curse on AI. I fucking despise and bored of, cannot live with AI anymore. It does not improve our life. It's made everything immeasurably worse. It's causing mass scale redundancies and left us beholden to fucking technology. I'm sat there talking to people in person, in an actual physical realm. This is how mad I sound. This is how mental it's made me. In a physical realm, yes, not some sort of fancy realm. In a physical realm, going, oh, hello, can we do this logically obvious thing that should be clear and quite, you know, easy to do? And they're going, oh, no, well, the AI system says we can't do it. It's like, yes, but you're a fucking human and I'm a fucking human and we're stood here in person. Let's just do it. Bollocks to what? Why are we beholden to the internet? I can't even use the internet anymore. You scroll on TikTok, it's just AI generated crap, and it's ads, 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 and then the ads are AI generated. I got an ad for an Amazon shoe thing that it was like a rhinestone shoe, exactly the sort of thing I would like. And it said what I bought versus reality. So it had a picture of the listing of the rhinestone shoes, and then it cut to the reality, which was an AI generated woman walking in the shoes. It wasn't reality at all. It's absolutely infuriated me so much. And you know, the people that like AI, they're cunts. So I'll tell you, they're cunts. They're boring, unintelligent, unimaginative, uncreative cunts. That's all it is. And I can prove that with this.
I love AI. Do you use AI?
Absolutely.
Do you use ChatGPT? Do you love ChatGPT? I love ChatGPT. I love it. ChatGPT is fantastic. It's so nice. ChatGPT.
What do you use it for?
I'm writing various books, and but I just use it. I just ask questions. You know that the answer, but ChatGPT always says, "Oh, your questions are clever. You're brilliant. You're excellent. You have such insight," and I love it.
There we go. Proof, if needs be, from one of the UK's prime cunts, Boris Johnson. He loves AI. I mean, it's just absolute madness. He's saying, oh, I'm writing a book, I'm using it. Are we not writing a book then, are you? You're not. Oh, you're asking it questions and it says that I'm brilliant. Oh, just bore off, will you? I'm so tired of it. You cannot claim to have any sort of creativity if you're using AI in that process. Now, I appreciate there are AI tools that are sort of inherent in our life. You know, the editing software uses AI. Things like that, or you know, there's systems like medical systems that where AI is beneficial, fine, but that's sort of like limited use AI. But generative AI, we're just ego blustering nonsense. I mean, as he says in that clip, oh, AI, you know, ChatGPT says I'm a very smart man and I ask very smart questions. Like, oh, what are you genuinely getting validation from a fucking computer program? I mean, it's pathetic, it really is pathetic. I refuse to call it AI music or AI art. I will exclusively refer to it as AI sounds and AI images. It is not AI, and it is AI. It is not at all artistically of any merit. It is just scraping the internet to sort of regurgitate pre-existing ideas. There's no creative value to it whatsoever. After the break, I will be bringing the mood back up with a man who exudes pure joy and happiness. One of the most viral videos, you may have seen it back in the day, 2006, almost 20 years old, The Evolution of Dance, probably one of the OG viral videos. He is a very lovely man, and it's very nice to speak to him. So if I've brought you down, give it 3 minutes and you can enjoy a much happier chat with my dear guest Judson. Joining me down the line now, a legend of the internet, an icon, perhaps the world's first YouTube celebrity. Hello, it is Judson Lightbly. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you. Now, I wonder, because obviously you're not necessarily known for your voice, and although you're visually very famous, it was from a very grainy image back in the day. So could you perhaps enlighten our listeners as to why you are so notable?
Yeah, in fact, that's when you look back and you realize you had an experience like that, that probably benefited me more than harmed me. So I'm known for, like you mentioned, probably the first viral video on YouTube of all time, a dance routine called The Evolution of Dance. So it'll be coming up on its 20th anniversary on April 6th, 2026, because that was the day I posted it. That tells you when it was posted. So on April 6th, 2006, I posted this 6-minute dance routine that I had been performing for about 5 years at the end of my motivational leadership talks. And I basically put it on YouTube because YouTube was one of the sites that gave you an embedding code that you could copy and paste into a MySpace profile.
Wow. That is, you have just sent tingles of nostalgia down many of our listeners' backs. Yeah, not only did for the internet days of early YouTube and MySpace, but also for this video. It is iconic. I think you'd struggle to find anyone over 20 who's not seen it. 315 million views. And this is back in the day when that was like a very significant amount of views. I mean, it still is today, but 20 years ago especially. It's pre-TikTok. This is probably one of the first viral moments. I wonder whether that was, you were able to capitalize that much on the virality, or because nowadays if someone goes viral, even just one video gets a million views, they're immediately, you know, trying to get a book deal, trying to position themselves. What was your immediate reaction to the virality?
So it was interesting because, again, this is the early days, and, you know, if somebody in the early 2000s called you up and said, "Hey, I saw a video of you on the internet," your immediate thought was, "Oh shit, is there anything out there that I need to be worried about?" You know, video sharing was, you know, and part of what made YouTube brilliant is they made sharing videos easier, because prior to that, even if you look at the viral videos, you know, the dancing baby from Ally McBeal, Gary Brasila's Numa Numa, the original one, you know, the Star Wars kid, those videos were full files. And so you would send the file to somebody else, and if they didn't have high speed, if they didn't have a direct line, it might take an hour or longer for it to download this, you know, 30-second grainy video. YouTube kind of led us down this path where sharing videos became a lot easier. So when my experience started rolling, I didn't even really know how to take advantage of it. So people always ask that question, did you make any money? I've never made any money directly off the viewer count of the YouTube video. The partner program didn't exist in 2006. It's all licensed music.
Yeah.
It was all, you know, it's one of those things where I'm not upset about it. I don't ever sit around and go, "Oh, if only, you know, 315 million views means it would be blah, blah, blah."
Yeah, yeah.
My career as a professional speaker thrives on who knows me.
Yeah, of course.
And so when you have an experience like that, I got, I mean, millions of dollars worth of advertising. You know, over here in the States, I got to do all of the major morning shows and talk shows and appearances. And for essentially about 4 or 5 years, I was the video, because there was no competition yet. It was before TikTok, and the video didn't even exist on Facebook. Facebook wasn't doing video at that point in time. Yeah. So, you know, YouTube was the only game in the video world, and my video was number one. And so it was a really nice, a very, very long run of being able to capitalize on that, just that notoriety and that exposure.
Brilliant. Yeah, not 15 minutes of fame, perhaps 15 months or even more. You know, you're the top of the game in the only game. That's brilliant. I'm very glad as well you were able to like benefit off it, because we talked to lots of viral people on this show. And yeah, often they're just regular people who have made no money off of their virality other than just sort of being well known forever. So I'm glad it translated into your keynote speaking. So you were already, I wondered, because when I you know, checked out your latest Instagram and your CV at the moment, I wondered whether you had transitioned from internet celebrity to keynote speaking, but you were always doing it. How did it, did you change the content of your speech based off of your success?
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate. And I think when you look at what happens to most people when they go viral, they try to pivot. They do something that catches on, and, you know, you can talk about what causes things to go viral and what things don't, but most people, they don't have a foundation to build upon whatever it was that made them viral.
Yeah.
So in my case, I was very fortunate that I had been speaking for almost 6 full years working on my stagecraft, getting better on stage, honing my own message. The dance was part of that message. And so then I go viral and now people say, okay, we want you to come perform or talk. And I had to do a really good job of saying yes to things that would continue my path and no to things that mm-hmm. weren't. There were some things that I did just for fun,
of course.
That people wanted me to just come dance. I got to do a couple of halftime shows for NBA games.
Oh, wow.
NBA finals and things like that. And so I was like, sure, I'll come dance. But 95% of the time it was, well, the cost to have me come dance is the same to have me come talk for 50 minutes and then do the dance.
Yeah.
And then so that was really the nice thing. If you watch me speak now and you didn't hear an intro, you didn't read anything about me, you wouldn't know that I was the Evolution of Dance guy until pretty much the very end of the show. I wanted to be very careful that my story from stage isn't about me. You know, when you work as a professional speaker, it should be about the audience.
Yeah.
And standing in front of the audience and saying, hey, I'm awesome because this happened to me, doesn't serve the audience in any way. You know, mm-hmm. my overall arcing theme is that everything changes, not everything evolves. And there's a difference between those two things. And the dance is just a reflection of how the world always moving. We always want to know what's new and what's trendy. Whether yeah. that's music and dancing or stylistic things or the new app or whatever it is. And so it doesn't mean that what happened before is bad or what coming down the pipeline is better. It's just a reflection of the way the world moves.
Yeah, but my other question was, you don't reveal your viral success until the end of your keynote speech. But at the end of it, here, 20 years on, do you still do the dance?
I do. So I'm Amazing. Actually announced... I think I announced about 3 or 4 months ago, I will be ending the dance in about a little under 2 years. So I'm going to continue to book it as far as if somebody wants to hire me to speak, the dance will still be part of the speech through June of 27.
Yeah.
I will perform it through the end of that year. I'm turning 50 this March. The running joke is my performance of the dance is going to go from funny to sad someday. I need to know when that is. And, you know, the applause won't be, oh, that was great, too. Aw, you know, good try. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. So we've caught you right at the, you know, the sort of pinnacle of the evolution of dance. There you go. A lesson to our listeners. You've got 2 years left to book Judson. If people do want to, well, we're very UK based. Do you come over to the UK a lot?
I've been over a couple times, so I've done a couple of different events. In the early days, I got to do a charity soccer game in Maastricht in the Netherlands. Mm. So I performed like in the middle of the field before the game. So that was a lot of fun. And I did a couple of different little things here and there over in the UK. So always willing to come across the pond and love being able to come over there.
Brilliant. Well, please, somebody ship Judson over. I would love to see the evolution of dance live. My follow-up question to that is, if people do want to book you, where should we send them? How can people get in touch to enjoy the last 2 years of the evolution of dance?
Yeah, my website is just my name. So it's Judson, JudsonLaipply .com. Mm-hmm. So, and if you just Google evolution of dance, it usually pops up pretty high up there too.
Amazing. And one final question before I'll let you get to it. I can see your gorgeous dog coming onto your lap there. So I'll go and let you fuss the dog. But
He gets a little separation anxiety. So whenever I'm not paying attention, he wants to jump up in my lap.
Adorable. I relate. My final question is, have you updated the evolution of dance? And it's 20 years on now. Do you add in some extra... a modern twist.
I do. So it would be hypocritical of me to not continue to evolve the evolution of dance itself, considering its existence is based upon the idea that things are always changing. So, for example, I had to remove the worm from just my own physicality standpoint. and I have updated it. It is now just under 8 minutes long instead of the original 6. So there's about a 2 minutes worth of new stuff on the end. Mm. So the last song that made it into the evolution of dance is basically, I'm trying to remember if it's last, like Whip and Nay Nay is in there.
Yep.
Drake's Hotline Bling.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the difficulties when it comes to adding songs and dances is the rule is kind of always this. If you saw the dance being performed with no music, mm-hmm. could you identify what song was being played?
Yeah. I suppose that's harder.
Yeah. And music videos are no longer the genre that they used to be. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, now it's mostly TikTok dances that are, you know, less than 15, 20 seconds. And there still doesn't seem to be this penetration globally of a dance and a song that go together.
Yeah, we have definitely seen the decline of a universal dance music recognition. But whilst it is still about, whilst you have the chance for another 2 years, just 2 years only, please so go see Judson wherever you can find him, book him for your events. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Joining me down the line now, I will let them describe themselves in their own words. The wonderful Salty Brian, who is coming to the UK at both the Soho Theatre and the Wells Millennium Centre in Cardiff with two different shows, memorialising, tributing to. Again, I'll let Salty decide their own words. But both Annie Lennox and Cyndi Lauper, legends of music. Hello, Salty. How are you?
Hello. I'm so good. How are you, Andrew?
I'm very good, thank you. You look already, this is obviously a sort of out of makeup, just a lovely casual Zoom, but you've got this gorgeous, glamorous sheen sort of curtain behind you. It's a wonderful image. I'm afraid the listeners can't see, but you look very good.
it does look divine, doesn't it? I'm actually visiting some friends in Los Angeles, so I'm at their very posh LA home. I'm a New Yorker, so I'm not an LA person, but I have been dropped down into the world of Los Angeles glamour for a moment, just for a moment.
The glamour increases indeed. Well, from New York to London, then we'll start with your Soho Theatre run, which is the 18th to 22nd of November with Heat So Unusual, your Cyndi Lauper show. So tell us a bit about it. What can people expect?
So, maybe I'll tell you first that I have a series called The Living Record Collection, where I take whole amazing albums and weave stories in and around the songs to create something new. And I have 21 different albums in the series. This show is one of those album story combinations. And I'm using Cyndi Lauper's debut album, which is called She's So Unusual. Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with the album itself, you will certainly know songs on it. It's got famously Girls Just Want to Have Fun, She Bop, All Through the Night. It's like serious radio play hits from Cyndi Lauper from the 80s. And she's also like covering a Prince song on the album. She's got a song from the 1930s on there. It's an incredible piece of art. And I'm super interested in not just song making and popular music, but album making and art albums, which my series celebrates. So what you are going to get when you come see the Cyndi Lauper show is her album in its entirety from start to finish, track one through to the end, with lots of little surprises along the way. And then I'm weaving this wild story in and around the songs about two gay ghosts from the 1930s who have unfinished business back here on Earth because of a murder that took place at a nightclub that they were performing at many, many decades ago in New York City. So all of Cyndi Lauper's music has been passed through a filter of 1930s jazz. So
amazing.
All of these songs you're familiar with, but you're getting like brass and upright bass and piano, and you're getting this wild, very campy, very silly, very queer murder mystery adventure all rolled into one.
Amazing. I mean, that sounds right up my street, but just surely tantalizing to anyone. How could you not? And that album from Cyndi Lauper is an absolute stunner. Me and my partner went to see her at the O2 last year. Oh no, earlier this year even on her farewell tour. And yeah, just iconic songs. Even if you're just sort of like, oh, I'm not sure if I know Cyndi Lauper that well, you will. You go along and you'll be like, oh no, these are hits that have been ingrained into my brain.
Absolutely. You cannot avoid some of the songs on this album. Everybody in the world knows them. And it's, and she's a remarkable, artist. Do you know, there's a lot of like pop, and I love pop music and I love pop divas. There's a lot of pop divas that don't write their own music. I mean, Cyndi Lauper is an incredible songwriter and musician on top of being a phenomenal performer and icon. So yeah, I love getting to sing all of her songs. It's a true treat.
Yeah, she's the whole package. A perfect. I'm very intrigued by some of the other albums that you cover. But one of them that we will highlight is Annie Lennox.
Yes.
So while you're over in the UK, not only will you be doing Soho Theatre, you'll also be at the Cabaret venue in Cardiff with your Annie Lennox show.
Indeed. And I can't tell you how excited I am. I had the Annie Lennox show at Edinburgh Fringe, not this summer, but the summer before, and then we were at Soho Theatre with it just a few months ago, and now I'm taking it to Wales, and I've never been to Wales. Can I tell you, I am so excited to go and see Wales and to be with the people, with the Welsh people, and perform for them. So I truly just can't wait.
It looks like a gorgeous venue. So it's the Wales Millennium Centre, which is a very iconic in British culture, this sort of big sort of copper scrawling massive text on the Cardiff seafront. And then they've got this beautiful little side room. And you're there from the 26th to 29th of November. Yep. And apologies. That's completely, I went flying there. I got too excited. By the Annie Lennox show. So that one is titled "These Are the Contents of My Head." Both the images are just so glamorous. I feel like there's just a little bit of sort of, you know, sensation for everyone. If you're interested in music, there's this amazing musicality. If you sort of like drag and makeup, there's this gorgeous glamour. Then as you say, there's campness, and then there's this story with the Cyndi Lauper one. Is there a story attached to the Annie Lennox one as well?
Yeah, the Annie Lennox one is I tell the entirety of a novel from 1899, an American novel called The Awakening by Kate Chopin. So over the course of the evening, you hear the whole of Annie Lennox's album Diva, and you hear the story of the whole novel that I tell in rapid speed. And then you also hear the story of my relationship to my mother as she was going through a divorce and I was sneaking into her closet and trying on all her clothes. So it's, you know, I'm using Annie Lennox's album Diva, and the whole, all of her music is pushed through the lens of Judy Garland's 1962 Carnegie Hall concert. So you have Diva on Diva on Diva on Diva on Diva. It's Annie Lennox, it's Judy Garland, it's my mom, it's me dressed up in my mom's clothes, it's the protagonist from Kate Chopin's novel Edna Pontellier, and Kate Chopin, the author herself. It's all these divas rolled into one, all the divas that made me who I am. So it's a really fun, wonderful ride with lots of surprises in it too.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fantastic alternative title, all the divas who made me who I am. That sounds amazing. So there you go, whether you are in London or in Cardiff, there is so much Salty Brine you can enjoy from Annie Lennox to Cyndi Lauper. But you teased 21 albums.
Yes.
Have you done all of these shows, or are they like in the future, they're in your head but not yet created in the world? Or
all 21 of them are made, and I'm working on 22 right now, so I'm always making more. And I actually just premiered a new one in New York last week, the 21st. So they're always like rolling down the conveyor belt. I've got them at various stages along the way, and once they're finished, then I start to take them out on the road.
Yes, they're both so tempting. I think just geographically, and also because me and my partner are massive Cyndi Lauper fans, I think we'll definitely try and get along to the Soho Theatre. Just a reminder of those dates, that is the 18th to the 22nd. And then if you are Welsh/Annie Lennox drawn, that is the 26th to the 29th. So this is your first time in Wales. Have you been to Ireland before?
To Ireland, is that what you said? Yes, I have. I've been to Ireland. I've been to Dublin and a little bit of some. So I'd like to do a lot more exploring in Ireland. And obviously, I've been to Scotland. I've been to Edinburgh and Glasgow and a little bit of exploring there. So I'm just like slowly tiptoeing around your lovely isles. But first time in Wales.
I was going to say, yes, so this is the final royal tick list for the final British nation. That's exciting. Now, Wales has been, Pulse the Nation, as much as I'd love it to be a full campy romp, and I try my best to make it that, there is also an obligation to talk about the news. It is sort of a topical show. And Wales has been in the news recently, quite a lot in the UK. It's quite a sort of cultural battleground at the moment. Do you know any Welsh news? Have you followed any of it?
I haven't followed any Welsh news at the moment. No, tell me what's going on.
Well, there's two big ones. Is they've introduced a 20 mile an hour speed limit, which is sort of seen as part of this war on motorists, as sort of the wokeism on the roads. It's all very nonsensical. But the other thing, there was a big by-election, which is when a politician in the UK stands down, they hold a sort of, you know, out of season election to fill the seat. And it was in Wales, it was in Caerphilly, which is just outside of Cardiff. It was the far right candidate was beaten out by the local Welsh nationalist candidate. I know nationalist is a sketchy word, but Welsh nationalism is much more, you know, it's not as Nazi-ish.
Yes.
So, yeah,
Welsh nationalism is like the protection of the Welsh language and Welsh identity.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm familiar.
Yeah, I suppose nationalism of an oppressed culture is less, you know, the far right dominance. So yes, Plaid Cymru, which is the main Welsh party, beat out the English far right party, who were expected to take the seat. So yes, you're coming into a hotly talked about country at the moment.
Oh my goodness. It's buzzing, I hear. Wow.
Enjoy your trip across Wales. Enjoy the Wales Millennium Centre, just again for our radio listeners, 26th to the 29th of November with These Are the Contents of My Head. And before that, enjoy the Soho Theatre, 18th to the 22nd of November with He's So Unusual. Thank you so much for talking to me, Kelsey.
Gosh, you're so welcome, Andrew. Thanks for having me on. I've had a really blast. Thank you.
I'm very glad. Take care.
There we go. That was Salty Brine talking to me about their Soho Theatre run from the 18th to the 22nd of November. Sounds like an absolutely joyous riot. And I am very fond of Cyndi Lauper. So I might go check that out myself, actually. Now, I'm still flying solo here at CASA Pulse of the Nation at FUBAR headquarters. I've still got a long list of people to pox and curse. But I've also been handed this news article here by my lovely producer, Kieran. Now, this is very upsetting news, I'm afraid. If you like a bit of chocolate with your biscuit, that may no longer be available to you, as McVitie's have had to remove the word chocolate from their Penguin and Club bars, as a decline in cocoa content means they cannot legally call it chocolate anymore. A very heartbreaking day. This is sort of notable. I don't know if anyone else is finding this. The chocolate is very, very expensive or harder to come by. And yeah, I guess McVitie's have encountered this exact same problem. So it's just going to be much more processed sort of stuff. Again, this is just, I guess, the direction that the world is heading in. Let me just quickly read this. The UK sources cocoa beans from West Africa and poor harvests as a result of severe drought conditions in cocoa-producing countries such as the Ivory Coast and Ghana have led to restricted supplies and higher prices. And, of course, McVitie's will not compromise on their profits. You know, they need to make sure the millions and millions go to their shareholders via dividends. So that obviously means we're just not going to get chocolate. Or if we do get chocolate, we're just going to have to pay more for it because, you know, God forbid you have to, you know, take the hit of profit decline as a CEO yourself. No, you must pass it on to the customer. During my lifetime, this is from a quote from Alex Hutchison, who is a confectionery historian. What a job. That is fantastic. Alex says, many confectioners are lowering the amount of cocoa in favour of cheaper alternatives. When processed, a cocoa bean becomes cocoa liquor, which contains 50% each of cocoa solids and cocoa butter. But manufacturers looking to save costs can reduce the amount of ingredients they use, which are directly from the bean, and instead use alternatives such as palm oil or shea butter. Now, I'm no environmentalist. I'm no scientist, but I'm pretty sure palm oil is bad. I will give that a Google in a minute. Make sure I'm not feeding you some duff information, but I'm pretty sure palm oil is bad for the orangutans, if my memory serves me correctly. So not only are we getting less chocolate, but the orangutans are losing their habitats. This is all for the sake of a fucking shit joke on a penguin bar. Anyway, Miss Hutchison, the confectionery historian, says, during my lifetime, the cost of cocoa has stayed around £2,607 a tonne. A tonne of cocoa, that's quite a lot, isn't it? I can't picture, I don't know what that would
equal. I can't like visualize a ton of cocoa, because like, it comes as cocoa bean. Is that a ton of cocoa bean or cocoa liquor? I have no idea. But anyway, £2,607 a ton, and it's now soared to 8,000. Fucking hell, 8,000. Sorry, I'm just live reading and reacting to this. £8,567 a ton. Christ alive! It's like the London housing market. That's absolutely exploded. That's like a 4x increase. Yeah, chocolate costs more than ever before. No shit, that is crazy. Wow. Oh my goodness, that is really really terrible. I just think we can just live without that much chocolate. I think we can. Decline our chocolate. I think there could be less penguins on the shelves. I don't think we have to turn to these cheaper alternatives. I don't think we have to damage the orangutans' habitats. I've got producer Kieran O'Meara feeding me some information. Do I enjoy penguin bar jokes? That's what I've been asked by producer Kieran. No, they've never been good. I think the only joy of a penguin bar joke is the ability, chance to subvert the penguin bar joke. You know, pretend you're reading it from a penguin bar and it's actually a very, very dark joke, something like that. Nothing springs to mind at the moment, / nothing I'd like to say in public on record. But yeah, that's quite funny if you go, oh, I got my penguin joke, and then you read something like absolutely horrific. That's quite a funny idea. But actual penguin jokes. Let me see if I... Oh, someone... Do you think comedians write those jokes? I don't think they do. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised, going back to the theme of ChatGPT.
I love AI.
I wouldn't be surprised if AI is now writing the penguin bar jokes. I know that is a bold claim to make. Please don't do me for libel or slander. But that is the way the world is moving. If they're willing to cut costs on chocolate, if they're willing to sacrifice the word chocolate from their product, I think they're fucking willing to sacrifice some joke writers. They're definitely not sourcing those from writers themselves, maybe back in the day. I just think it's so they're so lame. They're lame, but they're pathetic. I'm sure they just source them from the internet. But you know, McVitie's, come at me. If you're listening, a representative from McVitie's, tell me I'm wrong. And if you do have a position as a penguin joke bar writer, hit me up. I'm willing to crawl back to you. Kieran, yeah, Kieran is absolutely scolding me there from my hypocrisy. But I was saying to him earlier, comedians, we are absolutely fickle. We are shameless. We will do anything as long as our invoices get paid. So that's why I'm still here. So that's the big news at the moment. I wonder what's happening in 3 weeks' time. Hopefully not war. Hopefully the truce in Gaza is still holding, very tenuous. Israel very demanding of a fucking sort of hostage bodies repatriated. But the problem is there's a lot of rubble in Gaza. I wonder what caused that. Yes, that's finding it. It's been quite hard to retrieve all of the hostages. But hopefully peace is still holding in the Middle East. Maybe we're moving towards peace in Ukraine as well. There's certainly some talks going on with Putin and Zelensky. Zelensky desperate for some Tomahawk missiles as we sit here in mid-October. Let me know. Give me a tweet if you're listening in the future. Or well, you will be. This won't go out to the 11th of November. Give me a tweet or an Instagram or something if Zelensky's got his Tomahawk missiles. And I'll be like, oh, there we go. Good on him. Good on Vladimir. And the other news is that Graham Linehan's charges have been dropped. There will no longer be an investigation against his comments on X about the trans community. And the police, the Met Police, has resolved not to investigate non-crime hate incidents, which is just, what a ridiculous statement. Like, obviously, let's not investigate non-crimes. But you have to investigate it to find out whether or not it is a crime. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, and also, this isn't hate. This isn't like a hate incident. He's not going like, oh, I hate McVitie's penguin bar. They're exploitative and not even proper chocolate anymore. That's, I guess, technically that's a hate incident because I hate McVitie's. But it's not hate crime because I'm not going against someone's protected characteristic or a vulnerable group. But if you are continually tweeting hate or violence or... derogatory and defamatory statements to a protected characteristic group, you are surely that's not just hate, that you're going into hate crime. These people, they're protected characteristics, and if someone is tweeting that much about a protected group, you have to investigate it to see if a crime has occurred. You can't just say that you're not going to investigate non-crime hate incidents, because that is a fallacy. It's a paradox. You can't determine whether or not a crime has taken place without doing some level of investigation, unless the Met Police is just announcing that they're not going to do their job, which I suppose they don't really do that anyway, but yeah, whatever. Gremlin, another rancid, horrible man. I'll add him to my Etsy curses. I'm now, I think, taking a loss on today's show with all my Etsy witch curses. But I think they've all been deserving recipients. A lot of horrible hate for the trans community. It's a sort of continual, just sort of debating their existence, even. And it's just such a fundamental level of acceptance we have to have, surely, for these marginalized and, you know, vulnerable people. You know, there's obviously very powerful and supported and lovely, you know, strong, independent trans people, especially, you know, celebrity people in the media who have that sort of platform and network of support. But, you know, for the large part, most of my trans friends and trans people I know and trans people I know of, they're not rich, they're not celebrities. They're lucky if they have a support network, and often that support network is other trans people. You know, it's their own communities and their own groups that they make themselves. There is not wide-scale support for trans issues. I don't think people really realize that when they're sort of talking about this this ideology. It's not an ideology. There is no an ideology sort of has to impinge on some sort of basic like principles or sort of, you know, movement, but there is no like unification in trans rights other than trans people deserve to have healthcare and safety and not be harassed, and that's just basic human rights, really. So I think it's absolutely ridiculous that anyone calls it an ideology and is so violently against it. Anyway, just a little bit of fun, a little bit of lightheartedness. It's not all doom and gloom here at Pulse of the Nation. I do see some positives in the world, some beautiful, wonderful queer communities and trans creatives doing wonderful things. So yes, just fuck Graham Linehan. What a boring man who's sort of blown up his life over an issue that doesn't affect him at all. I'm protecting women and children, but not in these circumstances, and I don't care about these women and children, and I support wife beaters and I support paedophiles as long as they are, you know, agree with my anti-trans message. Yeah, whatever, you know, love women and children. Pathetic little worm of a man. Actually, I'm gonna go further into a loss and get a second Etsy witch curse on Graham Linehan and all who support him, Posey Parker and the like. Anyway, I've almost sort of at the end of my list here, but we've had some very bright spots, you know. Zach Polansky, Green surging in the polls, that's very positive sort of breath of fresh air. We spoke to Salty Brian, that was very nice, very, very lovely, wonderful creative cabaret star. There you go, if you want some positive gender non-conforming art, go see Salty Brian at the Soho Theatre this November. And we had a lovely chat with Judson, who is one of the original viral people. And you worry sometimes when people get virality that it's just going to be non-stop, you know, recognition and hate and just getting shit from it. And, you know, especially if they're just a normal person, can they even profit off of this newfound fame? But it was so lovely speaking to Judson and seeing that he was able to turn it into something positive for him. And he's still benefiting from it today. So, yeah, wonderful talking to Judson and Salty. And you know, if any of my Etsy witches come true, hopefully some of these problems won't be a problem in the future. I don't want them to die. Just put that on record. You know, I don't want to fucking end up in the investigation of a crime hate incident, as opposed to a non-crime hate incident. I just want them to sort of be hindered, removed from public relevance. I don't want any of these people to die. I don't wish death on anyone. But if they could just not be in the headlines, not be in my, you know, line of vision, not have any bearing on politics or our lives or our pockets or anything like that, that would be a dream. And I think there is a world where that will happen. I do think there is a world where we defeat the sort of fascistic, you know, oeuvre that is, you know, rising up a little bit at the moment. I think we've seen it in Canada. You know, anti-Trump sentiment managed to defeat the right wing in Canada, and I believe it can be done over here as well. I know Keir Starmer is sort of screwing the pooch, but my best hope is that he sort of takes the bullets for the next few metaphorical bullets. Oh my God, Christ, I don't think I've ever had to clarify as much in any other show how I don't want people to die. But yeah, you know, let's just put that on record. I don't want people to die. But you know, if he takes the sort of the headlines and the shit for the next few years, and then by the time the election rolls around, maybe we can just sort of parachute Andy Burnham in, a much more likable Labour personality, then maybe we should be okay. I'm hoping. I think we'll be all right. Take care. I offer you love and support and solidarity and hopefully a bit of light relief today. Obviously, it's been very weird solo manning the desk. But yeah, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I hope I've kept you company. Thank you for letting me get that all out of my system. I feel much happier now. I'm going to go to, and this will make you laugh to leave the day, I'm going to go to Crawley now. I'm going to go to Crawley and I'm going to perform in a pub. I'm doing a tour of pubs owned by a brewery. The name of that brewery, Buckcombe Brewery. Wonderful. By the way, I love a pint of Buckcombe. I make myself laugh. Anyway, I love a pint of Buckcombe. That's sincere. They do a lovely ale. I'm not really an ale drinker, but I've had it because it'd be rude not to. And it's very lovely. It's very drinkable. But it is ultimately called Buckcombe, and that is funny. We'll leave it on that. I'm off to go do a gig in a Buckcombe brewery, and have a lovely, lovely week. And I'll see you next time. Thank you. Bye bye.